Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. Get started today and you'll get a risk-free bet of up to $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at WynnBET.com and download the app today. We're also brought to you by Coors Light. When you're sweating out your bets, make sure to grab a mountain cold refreshment. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It is literally made to chill. We're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's number one app to buy and sell sports bets. Use promo code SGP for your first deposit and receive up to $500 in bonus cash. That's PropSwap.com, promo code SGP. And finally, we're also brought to you by the SGPN app. That's right, we've got an app now. Just go ahead and enter SGPN into either the App Store or the Google Play Store and download that app today.
Howdy ho, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. And happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there, including my associate host who's not allowed to talk yet, but happy Father's Day to him as well. Episode 48, I usually dedicate it to a person based on the number, but we'll just dedicate it to all you degenerate fathers out there who spent your Father's Day sitting in front of a television or multiple televisions sweating out your horrible degenerate bets. Hopefully you picked the Suns, but or for you degenerate fathers out there who lost your children's college education savings because you followed our picks last night at UFC Vegas 29. So this is dedicated to all of you. I would be your host, Jeff Fox. Hello. You're coming to the podcast as another host of another podcast I listen to, likes to say. This is episode, like I said, episode 48. We are on our own feed now. If you're not listening to us on there, please do. MMA Gambling Podcast is the fancy name for the podcast and for the feed. So if you're listening to us on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network feed, try to, if you could pop over to our dedicated feed and subscribe to us there, that would be appreciated because we're not going to be on the main feed for much longer. I keep saying that. It sounds like I'm crying wolf, but true. I swear we're not going to be on there for much longer. So I do have an associate co-host, like I said. I always like to tell you about how tough he is before. That's become my new thing, is to talk up how tough he is. My introductions for him have really progressed over the episodes, and now it's become like he's the toughest man in the world. It's gonna be like those old Chuck Norris jokes you used to hear, but he is the toughest dad around. His kids can truly say my dad can beat up your dad. When his kids go to school, they definitely could say that my dad will beat up your dad, because he's a purple belt, damn it, and he's the king of the Gogo Plata, and his name is Daniel Gumball Vreeland. Why do they call you Gumball? I've always wanted to call you ask you why is your nickname Gumball?
It's Gumby.
Oh, I thought it was Gumball.
Gumball
or Gumbo. I thought it could be Gumbo.
It is. So for anybody who did wonder why, because we love nicknames on this show, too.
We do. That's worth noting. I forgot him. Juicy Jeff.
Yeah, Juicy. Although maybe after this week, you don't want to be Juicy anymore. But with that being said, for anybody who's ever wondered, I am Gumby Vreeland because – despite weighing quite a bit more than 200 pounds, I weigh a little bit more than 200 pounds standing a little bit taller than 6 feet tall. I'm still smaller than Jeff because Jeff's, what are you, 6'6"?
Yeah, 6'5 and three quarters, but yeah, we'll go to 6'6".
6'5 and six, three quarters. I'm about 6'2", 6'3", somewhere in that range, and weigh over 200 pounds. And despite that, I can feed myself cereal using my feet and pick my foot up to my nose and touch it to my nose without using my hands. So I'm real Gumby.
Listen to this guy brag. I think it got a little.
Is that a bragging point? Like you picking up ladies with that? Like I can eat cereal without.
Ladies, men, whatever you're into, Dan. It's that's interesting humble brag you got there. So you talk about how big you were. Oh, I'm so big and strong.
Well, I didn't say you were bigger than me.
Whatever.
I can give you that.
Way older than you too, so I have old man strength. Old man strength. So, I forgot to mention the Mediocre Boys are back too. For those of you who missed us,
We're real mediocre.
The Mediocre Jeff was around a couple weeks ago. Mediocre Dan, it's been 4 weeks I think since we've seen Mediocre Dan.
It's been a minute since Mediocre Dan has been here, but he is back.
10-4, 8-4, and then he was 5-5. So yeah, it's been a few events since we've had Mediocre Dan in our presence. But Mediocre Dan is here. Mediocre Jeff is here as well. Because it was quite a mediocre event last night. I'm going to blame the whole event. I'm going to say the whole event was mediocre. Everyone's getting the mediocre brush today because I was not happy. Started off happy watching it, and then I got really, really grumpy as the event went on. But we'll tell you about that in due time. I want to tell you about WinBet first. I like to get these ad reads out of the way. Our lovely sponsors. Let's tell you about WinBet. They're bringing you the action of real sports betting with the Win Las Vegas experience. Get in on all your favorite teams, players, and sports games. Generous promos, odds, and parlays are happening right now at WinBet. Get started today, and you receive a special offer of up to $500. Risk-free sports bet. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at WynNBet.com and download the app today. Should we get right into it, or you want to talk about something else first before we dissect how bad we did? Did you watch Ultimate Fighter?
I still haven't caught up on that Ultimate Fighter episode. I might double dip on Tuesday. Then on Wednesday night, we're really going to have some stuff to talk about.
He's going
to
OD.
So my previous prediction that Trishon Gore wins by knockout is still kind of just hanging in the balance for me. Like, he still might have already won by knockout a tape delay last week from 3 weeks ago. But that prediction could still come true for me. But I haven't watched Tough yet. I will say, if you want to shoot the shit about some other MMA, there was a weird-ass PFL event.
Yes, I haven't made it to the main event. I started watching it. I haven't made the main event, but I heard...
Just don't watch it. Just don't watch it.
Was it really bad? Was it like boxing level decision? Or was the decision bad or was the fight bad or both?
I wouldn't say the fight was awful.
Rory McDonald we're talking about. Rory McDonald and Gleison Tibau. Go ahead.
Rory McDonald looked like Rory McDonald. Like, he put a beating on Gleison Tibau. But, like, the way that, like, Rory McDonald does, where, like, he doesn't quite pour it on the way that you kind of wish he would. Like, that's kind of always been the knock on him, right? Like, he had his moments in that Robbie Lawler fight, but, like, never tried to pour it on. And then when Robbie got his moment, he really poured it on. So... that kind of, you know, Rory Mac was still there, but he had his moments and he looked good. And I thought he won. I had it 30-27. I didn't even give Gleison Tibau a round. And then somehow two judges gave him 2 out of 3. It was very surprising. So much so Gleison Tibau has come out and said it was a surprising decision.
Well, there you go. I haven't watched it yet, so I can't. I don't know if I eventually will get to it or not.
But that means if you watched earlier in the card, you did get to see Filthy Tom Lawler win and retire simultaneously.
I didn't watch the prelims, so I didn't.
It was like a great moment.
Not like you.
The only thing that bummed me out about that moment, though, is I will say, and this hurt me a little bit, is he won. He was like crying. And he, like, took off the gloves and left them in the ring. And I was like, man, what a touching moment for a guy who's given us, you know, he's not a legend of the sport by any stretch of the imagination. But he has given us some wars. He's put really good fights on. And to just, like, let him go out on his own terms just, like, felt really good. You know, because nobody nobody chooses their ending at the end of their MMA career, right? So he does that, and he puts his gloves down, and then the announcers just casually mention Tom Lawler, currently sitting at fourth place in the light heavyweight division. He is currently qualified for the playoffs, and I was like, no! He got his moment! Let him have it!
Exactly. I know. It's like the mob, Dan. You think you're out, and they suck you back in. So
he did it. For those who don't know, he did eventually fall out of the playoff rankings and is not going to fight again. So he did get his moment, but there was like a moment where they felt like they were stealing that from me.
Yes. If you want to see him now, you're going to have to watch New Japan Pro Wrestling Strong every Friday night. He is the champ of the American division of New Japan Pro Wrestling. Have you seen what he wears when he wrestles, Dan?
I can only imagine, because that dude is an animal.
He wears short jean shorts, like super tight short jean shorts, basically almost Speedo size jean shorts and like big high boots. So yeah, it's pretty funny.
So that surprises me not at all, because I will tell you that I once so I was going to a Bellator fight in this has got to be so long ago. I only remember it had to have been Bellator, and we were barely in double digits. Like, probably like Bellator like 48 or something like that. And you guys can go back and look up when Bellator fought in Uncasville, Connecticut back in, it had to have been 2010 or 2011. And he was cornering somebody for that fight along with Seth Petrozelli, the guy who knocked out Kimbo. And, you know, like, you're in a casino, and, you know, like, whatever. There's some people going to the fights, and there's some people, you know, just going to the casino. So everybody's dressed up semi-nice, but, I mean, it's not, like, the nicest casino in the world, but semi-nice. And we saw some guy in, like, cut-off jean shorts that, like, barely made it past their crotch. And, like,
yeah, that's what he wears.
and he was barefoot. I was like, yes. Who's that? I, like, looked down the hall, and I was like, who the hell is that? And my older brother was like, I think that's Tom Lawler. And then we realized it was Seth Petrozelli walking with him, and we realized they must have been cornering somebody. But, like, he was just walking through the casino with no shoes on.
And guess what? It shows what kind of freak Dan is. It was Bellator 48. Was in Uncasville, Connecticut.
Boom!
It was August 20th, 2011, the Mohegan Sun. So you nailed it.
Man,
crazy.
I wasn't even that far off at all. Look at the intern getting on that one quick, too.
What was the main event, Dan?
Marlon Sandro got knocked out by Pat Kern in the finals of the Featherweight Grand Prix, then led Pat Kern to fight. Did he fight Patricio Pitbull for the championship and won the title?
Maybe.
Now I got
to
look up.
Through to that. I'm looking it up. You keep talking.
Pat Kern won the title. Oh, he fought Joe Warren, the most dangerous man on earth.
And then he beat Patricio, and then he beat Shalabulat, Shamhalev.
Shamhalev,
Then he lost to Daniel Strauss.
Yeah, he had an amazing career. I feel like not enough people talk about Pat Curran.
True.
But that knockout was sick. If anybody is a weirdo and likes to watch very old MMA fights, go back and find a highlight of that head kick, because that head kick is sick.
Sick.
See, also on that fight card, tell me if I'm wrong, because you've got it open, right?
Yeah.
On that fight card, Cole Conrad, who I think is the most underrated heavyweight in the history of MMA, beat Paul Buonatello?
He did.
He beat Paul Buonatello, and he decided not to use his wrestling to prove a point and outboxed him, despite the fact he was like a NCAA champion wrestler.
That's why you people come here, right?
Because I have this kind of knowledge just in the back of my
head. Dan is telling you about Bellator from, it was officially almost 10 years ago, August 20th. So in 2 months, it'll be 10 years old, and Dan is telling you what happened on this basically meaningless, I guess it was meaningless, it had the featherweight tournament final, but. Yes, and it drew 226,000 viewers on MTV2, so there you go.
But I was there in person.
So exciting. That was before that's when you had to pay, right? That was before I was signing for free.
Although I think, was I writing for you yet then, over maybe. That manifesto?
Maybe.
That's got to be right around the start if it was. But I did go to that one and paid money.
There you go. No, this is just us killing time, so we don't have to talk about how bad we did. But I guess we should talk about how bad we did. Now, let's talk about Coors Light first, all right? That's much better to talk about than how mediocre we were. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nothing but nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family, a million pressing social issues, and expectation to be on 24/7. Sometimes you just need a moment to churn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. Mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's literally made to chill. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. Perfect for a moment to unwind. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look. Delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate responsibly. Okay. Sounds like I've been celebrating irresponsibly today the way I'm talking. But all right, let's break her down. We're talking about Korean Zombie versus Ige, which last minute they seemed to change it to Jung versus Ige, but whatever. It's got a million different names, of course, as these always do. Main event, Dan got right, I got wrong. Opener, I got right, Dan got wrong. That's it. The rest of the card, we were identical on. So we ended up a very mediocre 5-7. I ended up down $290 because we bet $100 in every fight, of course. Dan ended up down $329. Dan hit his lock. I missed my lock, so that hurt even more.
Who is my lock?
Your lock was Sergey Spivak, who I thought was going to lose, but then,
of course, the old
man gassed out. So Dan's 7-7 on locks, so he's brought himself up to 500. I'm down to 9-5 on the locks. And then for overall
coming for you.
Hmm? Yeah, you're gunning.
Coming
you're
two, for you.
Only two games behind. Two games behind me in the playoff spot there. Overall record, I am at 55%, still Dan's at 53%, so that didn't move at all. But
should I ask you about the money leader?
It's gotten worse. Yikes. It's almost $1,000 different between us now. Unless
boom!
It couldn't have gotten worse. I just didn't pay attention, I guess, last week, yeah. Dan's down $2,300, I'm down $3,200, so not good, Daniel, not good at all. But
less not good for me.
Yes, less not good for you. Very, very good English for multiple degree man. Less not good. All right, main event. I got wrong, you got right. Chen Sung Jung is not – well, I kind of got it right. Dan Ige is super durable and scrappy and impossible to finish, so I got that part right. But Mr. Zombie, Korean, the is not washed as of yet. He quite tentative to start the fight, both of them. And then he got it going. Not a super exciting fight, but Mr. Zombie got the 48-47, 49-46, 49-46 win. He got, a 10-8 round in there. Your thoughts. Go right ahead. You got it right, so you can brag.
I got it right, and I will say this, is that you're right. The striking seemed about 50-50. It was maybe not all that exciting of a striking match, especially from what you've come to expect from Korean Zombie, right? Or even what you've come to expect for Dan Ige.
Right.
But I do really want to bring back to a point that I made on the last episode that I feel really good about, is that I said that if this does wind up 50-50, and I did give the nod to Korean Zombie striking-wise, I thought he was a little bit better. He may have actually been a little bit worse, but I will say this. I said if it doesn't work out for him on the feet, he's got the grappling. Right, like the grappling to me was Korean Zombie over everybody, over Dan Ige, and actually over most people in that division. I actually think his grappling amongst the top guys in that division, with the exception of maybe Brian Ortega, is probably better. And it showed in this fight, right? Like that was the big knock here on Dan Ige, is that like Dan Ige definitely can box with Korean Zombie. Definitely couldn't stuff his takedowns. And once he was on the bottom, he had some ideas, but, like, couldn't execute any of them. Not terribly exciting. I have to ask you, though, when you're watching this fight, either live or on replay or whenever you watched it, how close did you have this fight? Because I see that, like, one judge gave Dan Ige two rounds, and I could not find two rounds that I would give to Dan Ige in that fight.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back. It wasn't a close fight if you're just scoring the fight on a whole like we used to do back in, what, Pride or whatever. But he clearly didn't win the fight. Maybe you could have made a case for him to win a round.
I thought maybe the first. But even that, I thought, like, Like, even the rounds that I did, the round that I did score for Danny Gay, I was like, that totally could have been Zombie's round. Like, I thought my score was 50-45 at the end, and to see that many judges give it to Ige was, or you know, any rounds to Ige was kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. He clearly wasn't winning the fight or going to win it, really. It became pretty obvious that it was not in the cards for me with that fight. So what do you think this does this do anything for the Zombie stock at all? It doesn't change in my performance rankings on MMA-Manifesto that I run, which are based off performance, the most recent performance, who they fought, if they finished him, that type of thing. He's still in fifth place. He hasn't moved. This basically just he's treading water after this.
Yeah,
game.
And it's hard for him to move in either those rankings or the official rankings too.
Right.
If you look ahead of him in the UFC's official rankings is Yair Rodriguez.
Right. Yep.
Who's knocked him out semi recently, and ahead of that is Brian Ortega, who just styled on him. So like.
Yep.
He was talking in his post-fight interview or, you know, like after the fight about wanting to move up. Like, there's nowhere for you to move up right now. There's nobody for you to fight up except for rematches. And I don't know if enough time has passed for those rematches or if there's enough, like, demand for those rematches. I for sure would watch him fight Yair Rodriguez. Like I think another – like, because I think he won that fight until Yair Rodriguez landed that weird elbow. So, like, I'd watch that rematch, but Yair seems to be rebooked with Max Holloway soon. You know,
yep.
Brian Ortega is fighting Volkanovski. That's it. Those are the only four people in front of you. So,
yep.
I think he's probably going to get another guy like Dan Ige. Maybe Arnold Allen. Arnold Allen makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
And it sucks that he won and beat number eight as number four and is going to be given number seven or...
Yeah.
Hell, you know who I'd really like to see him fight is I'd love to see him fight Giga Chikadze.
Sure.
And I he's lower than Dan Ige, but like, is he worse than Dan Ige? Probably not, right? Like, he's more fun striking. His takedown defense is probably better. So like, I'd like to see Giga Chikadze or Edson Barboza or like
I was just gonna say that one. Yeah, Barboza. That would be fun.
And, like, Barboza fought Ige and lost, but, like, I say lost in quotation marks. I scored that fight for Edson Barboza. So, like, I think Giga Chikadze would be the better pick. I would say Giga Chikadze and Arnold Allen are options 1 and 1A, and then Edson Barboza is option 2.
There you go. Sure. Works for me. I will watch. Well, I'm forced to watch at this point, so. I'll watch whatever you.
Anything he's in is entertaining.
Yeah.
If you give him a striker who's going to try to defend takedowns and do so better than Ige did, like it would be watchable.
Yes, definitely. Co-main event not really watchable. You know, it was all right. It was two big guys grappling. I thought we were going to lose at one point, Alexio,
the end of the first?
Yes.
The end of the first.
As per usual. Olenek did good in the first, and then and Spivak. He didn't really beat him clearly. He edged past him, I would say, the last two rounds. I don't think it really did much for his stock, though, Spivak's stock going forward. It's, you know, it's a quality win, but it's not like he opened eyes or anything after that performance.
No, I don't think so either. And the question I have, too, is just, like, where does he fit? Because he is on a three-fight winning streak.
Right.
But it's, like, a weird majority decision over Carlos Felipe where one judge had it a draw. And to be honest, I think I had it a draw. He TKO'd Jared Vandera, which, I don't know, is that a quality win? Vandera looked pretty good his last time out, I guess. And then he decisioned Alexi Olenek by basically saying, no, I won't grapple with you, Alexi. You have to box with me. And when anybody does that to Alexi Olenek, they beat him. And he had that loss before to Marcin Tybura, that loss before to Walt Harris, that, you know, I guess he beat Tai Tuivasa in there. But, like, none of his fights have looked in a way where I was like, oh, yeah, like, buckle me up for Sergey Spivak versus Tom Aspinall, or give me Sergey Spivak versus Chris Daukaus. Like, he's young and he's got time, but, like, Man, he needs like a decent signature win in there. Maybe somebody like Arlovsky? Like maybe Andre Arlovsky's next?
Oh, you're offering up your boyfriend to get sacrificed to the polar bear?
No, he's just usually the one who turns away the prospects that aren't prospects.
That's true. And he's not even like that much of a chunky guy. I guess he's a chunky guy. I was going to say he's not that much of a chunky guy either. So
he's
like
a blubbery guy.
Yeah, he doesn't have much going. Well, polar bear, there you go. Doesn't have much going for him. So, my takeaway from the fight is my son's like, hey, you look just like Alexei Oleinik. I'm like,
ooh,
don't. I know. He's like, you have the same hair. If you cut your
as
hair
Alexei
shorter.
As Alexei Oleinik?
Yeah.
You have the same hair as Alexei Oleinik?
I know. And so he's like, who's that old guy? And then he's like, hey, he looks like you. I'm like, oh, thanks a lot. And then he's like, if you cut your hair a little shorter, then you'll be just like him. And he's like, except he's skinnier. I'm like, oh, you're awesome. He's really.
Also, you have a sizable height advantage on Alexei Oleinik, I feel
yes,
like.
Yes, true. He would destroy me in a fight, let me tell you, but yes.
And he's a good grappler.
Yeah, he is a good. He almost. I thought he was going to get that choke in. He was going for his signature choke at one point, but
he had me sweating a little bit there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then after that, he was like a fish out of water the rest of the fight. So
that's another good piece of breakdown that we had there too. Not to toot our own horn in a week where we have no business tooting our own horn, but
yeah, we got this one right, dude.
We said Spivak would absolutely wear out Alexei Oleinik because Oleinik needs a takedown, and he needs to finish it on that takedown because he's going to be too tired for a second takedown. And that's what happened. Like, he didn't get the first one. He didn't get the sub on the first one. He didn't have enough energy for the second one.
Yep. Maybe the fight seemed a little boring because the fight before it was a killer. It was a banger. Marlon Vera beat Davy Grant via unanimous decision, 29-27, 29-28, 30-26. So another one of those scorecards all over the place, which just annoys me when I see scorecards all over the place here. But yeah, this was a heck of a fight. We got it wrong. Davy Grant got bloodied up, but it was a damn good fight.
Yeah, I actually think the fight was a lot closer than people realize, too, because first of all, 30-26 is a farce. That's a terrible scorecard.
Yep.
I had round one for Davy Grant, clearly.
Yeah,
I think round two you could flip a coin on. I realize all three judges gave it to Marlon Vera, but I think you could flip a coin on round two. Dave, you could make an argument that Davy Grant won that round.
I think and that, isn't I, that where he, sorry to interrupt, isn't that where he cut him open, though? I think that probably played into it. I think Grant outstruck him. Like, he had more strikes landed, but I think Vera did the damage, so that probably won it for him.
And Vera had a good position at the end, too.
Right.
That's the other thing. So, yeah, I think both those played a factor, but if you score that round as a whole, which you're supposed to do, I actually think Davy Grant had an argument to win that round. And then I did score the last round 10-8 for Marlon Vera. When they went to judges' scorecards, I thought there was a realistic possibility that this went to draw. So to see 30-26 was a little wrong to me because, first of all, you could score – like the 29-27 made sense to me, right? Because you just gave the second round to Vera in what I thought was a coin flip and then gave him a 10-8. The second judge not giving Vera the 10-8 was stupid, and the third judge giving Vera the first round was also stupid. But, like, you know, Davy Grant can't be too upset with the fact that he didn't win that fight, because I do think Vera looked really good in the third and good enough in the second. But, plus they win an extra $50,000, because this was by far, and nothing was even close to fight of the night. Maybe Chaos Williams, Matthew Semelisberger, but
yeah,
like this
was pretty good.
That was pretty good, but this one was top notch here, and a hell of a fight. I'm a little bummed for Davy Grant because at his age, it feels like there's no rebound here. You know what I mean?
No, probably not.
He's 36. Like, this is his last run, and like he'll stick around for a while longer. But like he was talking about being top 15 and getting some big name fights, and like maybe a headline in a card, and like he ain't gonna do that now, probably.
No. So what about Vera? This actually dropped him in my rankings because some of his bigger past performances are farther away now, so he gets less credit for those. So he's dropped from like 8 to around 11th now in my rankings. But so he's still generally the same range, but it hasn't really propelled him up. What do you think happens with him next?
You know, I think he's still got to fight another unranked opponent. as yeah. long as I'm being honest. Because, like, did he win this fight? Yeah. But he looked not great against a 36-year-old dude. He's coming off a loss to Jose Aldo. He's got that win over Sean O'Malley, but even that, like, people are kind of talking about as, like, not being all that impressive. He lost to Song Yadong, who's not ranked anymore, and, like, say what you want about that decision. But again, like, he doesn't have a lot of big-name wins if you take that Sean O'Malley one away, right? Like, his best win outside of that is Andre Ewell.
I like Andre Ewell,
but like not in the way that I like really like fighters. So I mean, like, I'd say give him somebody unranked. Like, I know Randy Costa and Adrian Yanez are already booked, but somebody of that caliber. Has he fought Ricky Simon before? Like that kind of fits the bill. Ricky Simon's another guy who like. Probably should be ranked, but isn't because he lost that stupid fight to Uriah Faber. Both of those guys could use each other. So I'd take Marlon Vera versus Ricky Simon.
Yeah, that hasn't happened. I checked. The intern checked. I mean,
intern's on his fucking game today.
You got it, dude. You got it. All right. Who else was on their game? Sung-woo Choi was on his game. He looked fantastic when destroying Julian Juicy J. Arosa in a minute 37. Another fight that we got wrong. Choi was way faster than him. I think that was the main takeaway here, was how fast he was compared to Arosa.
Yeah, well, I would say that's a big takeaway. Sung-woo Choi looked not just fast comparatively, but incredibly fast, period. Like, he looked really fast. And that, you know, like, I think I kind of wrote him off after his two losses to kick off his career. But
yeah.
Looking back, those are to Movsar Evloev and Gavin Tucker. He hasn't really lost to a striker in his whole career, so to speak. So, like, the other thing I will say that I took away from this fight, other than his speed, is just Arosa's durability was not what I thought it was.
Like,
I thought he could take a punch really well. And he got hit really. I mean, it wasn't a bad strike, right? Like Sung-woo Choi came with the noise, but like to take all of those punches from Sean Woodson and not get knocked out, and like he took three rounds of abuse from Grant Dawson, who's now a lightweight and is a beast, and didn't get knocked out. He's an actual beast, though. Like, and like I thought he was going to be more durable than that, and he certainly wasn't, and that cost us that pick.
No, I'm blanking on what I was going to totally say there, which isn't good. I know what I was going to say. It's almost as if, like, you're talking how Arosa, like, normally is so durable. It's almost as if he was under some kind of curse going into this fight.
You know, I saw this on Twitter. you're really pushing the Top Turtle curse. Because this week, by the way, Top Turtle guys did not do well. Because not only did we have Julian Arosa, but Alexa Kamer, who we'll talk about in a second, didn't win.
Yep.
And actually, if you go back, there are a couple other people who lost on the different parts of the card. Like Danny Gay has been on the Top Turtle podcast.
Right.
Davey Grant's been on the Top Turtle, although then again Marlon Vera has. We do have a couple of winners in there. Matt Brown and Rick Glenn have both been on the show, but
I think it's a more recent thing. It's more of a recent thing.
You're talking more recent things, and recently hasn't been good, but I will say two episodes ago, both Marcin Tybura and Claudio Puelles both looked good. So I'm going to hang my hat on that recently, but yeah, this past week wasn't good.
Yeah, Dan's worried he's going to have trouble getting gas if I keep pushing
away.
I'm going to scare guys away, but people get in car accidents after they talk to you. People get flatlined.
You're still blaming me for Frank Camacho's car.
No, I'm not blaming. I'm just stating that's what happened. Shortly after he spoke with you, you got in a car accident. Shortly after Julian Rosa spoke to you, a fast Korean boy knocked him out. So
that you could call that a car accident, too.
Yeah,
actually.
It was. No kidding. Another car accident was in the fight before, but we actually started off the main car with a lot of fire. We got this one right. Middleweights, Bruno, the middleweight Silva, Starch, Wellington, Turman. I was getting a little nervous or sweating, as degenerate gamblers like to say, because Thurman was looking pretty good, at least grappling-wise against Silva, starting, but then Silva laid into him and flatlined him with ground and pound, which was very impressive.
Yeah, I couldn't believe he knocked him out from guard.
He was ground and pound from guard.
And it might have been, like, he passed to some more advantageous positions. I think Terman's submission attempts off of his back look good. But we part of the reason why we picked Bruno Silva was the knockouts on his regional scene, right? Like, he had really good knockouts in M1 Global, and, like, that was enough for us to think that he was for real. So, and I think it proved its point here. Like, he looked really good. And, you know, another piece of my analysis here was if you get knocked out by Andrew Sanchez, a big, powerful Brazilian dude coming off the USADA suspension, probably can also knock you out. So that's what Bruno Silva did here. I will say I'm excited to see him again, though. He was fun to watch.
Yep, definitely. I think he pretty much lived up to – maybe it was more octagon jitters for the first few minutes of the fight, but he got the job done and didn't take him very long either. So definitely lived up to the hype. Matt Brown, we got this one wrong too. Yikes.
Wrong, and I couldn't be happier about it.
Yeah, Matt Brown starched Diego Lima in the second round, knocked him out cold. It was a walk-off. You don't see very many old welterweights, for that matter, get walk-off knockouts. So now Matt Brown is tied for the most knockouts in UFC history with two other people. Do you know who he's tied with? 12 knockouts, career knockouts, I believe.
12? Man, I did see this stat, and I feel like I'm going to get it wrong now anyway. Well,
one of them's a current heavyweight, and one of them...
Is it Derek Lewis?
Yes, Derek Lewis, and the other one is... I think he's a celebrity boxer now. Which doesn't really...
Oh, Anderson Silva.
No, Anderson Silva's a real... He beat a real boxer, so I think he's a real boxer.
That's true. We didn't even talk about that. No, Anderson Silva boxed a real middleweight champion and beat him.
And he's 44 or whatever, 45.
Yeah.
This gentleman is also getting into celebrity boxing.
Not Tyron Woodley.
Nope. See, it's pretty sad that it doesn't limit it, telling you that.
There's so many celebrity boxers.
He's going to fight Oscar De La Hoya, this person.
Oh, Vitor Belfort.
Vitor Belfort. There you go.
So Vitor Belfort. He was in the UFC for 150 years.
Yeah, so it's very impressive that Matt Brown's the smallest by far of the three.
Although Matt Brown's been in the UFC for a fucking long time, too. He was on Tough 7, the season won by Amir Sadala?
2004, was when you were on.
Not 2004, right?
I think that's what it said.
I think it's 2008.
No, I'm sorry.
I think I was in college, so it has to be 2008.
Yep, 2008. You're right.
Yeah.
My mistakes. Yeah, he's been around in the UFC since 2008. So, I thought we were going to get this one right, but he turned it on and starched him. I don't know.
Right hand was so good, too.
Yeah.
Did it really
show us much about Matt Brown? Like, it's not like he's going to make another run or anything, right? This is probably just retirement.
I don't think he's going to make another run, but the fact that he still has that much power.
Right.
And like not for anything, he's won 3 out of 5, including three knockouts. He knocked out Diego Sanchez, Ben Saunders, and now Diego Lima. And I will say this, The knockout of Ben Saunders. Ben Saunders is 38 years old now, and granted, when he knocked him out was a year and a half ago, so he was only either 36 or 37 at the time. He knocked out Diego Sanchez, who's 140, so that's also an old guy. He knocked out Diego Lima, who's 32 years old. That's pretty impressive. Like, it does tell us something about him in that Matt Brown is not just still knocking out people, but he can knock out young people, too. Youngish people. I think it does tell us something about Matt Brown. Like, he's not going to be champion. But let me ask you this. Do you feel like Matt Brown could possibly make it back into the UFC top 15 at some point in time? Does it make you at least think about it?
No, not a welterweight. No, I don't think that's gonna happen.
Let me ask you something. Would you at least hesitate before picking Santiago Ponzinibbio instead of him?
In a fight or to vote for either of them?
In a fight.
Would you? Yeah, possibly, yeah. Nah, I'm not sold
You're
yet.
Thinking, though. You're thinking, though. That's all
true.
I need.
That's true.
And that's the number 13 guy in the world. Now, I'm going to ask you another one.
Yeah.
Would you take Demian Maia or Matt Brown?
Matt Brown.
And Demian Maia's number 11.
Yeah, there you go. That's crazy.
Could be ranked still. And
there
that's
you go.
Crazy at 40 years old in the welterweight division. So to answer your original point, like, I do think it tells us something about Matt Brown. He's crazy dangerous.
You know, Dan rests his case. He's immortal, so I guess he's just living up to his nickname. We thought it was just out of the cage, but apparently he's in the cage too. So he got the performance of the night bonus. I think he, according to the estimates I posted on MMA-manifesto.com, he was the top earner at the event. And then Sungwoo Choi got $50,000 for his knockout we just spoke of. And then, as we said before, Vera and Grant were a fight of the night. So bonuses went to all on the main card. So that wrapped up the main card.
Do you have any issues with any of those this time? Mm. I usually have issues with the bonuses. I think they're right this time.
Yeah, no, it seems about right to me, yeah.
The only other ones I thought about was maybe Rick Glenn, which we'll talk about in a second. But, I don't know. I think even that's probably not as good as these two. I think those picks were right on.
Yeah, but we got them both. We got those picks wrong, so I don't really want to say I agree with it. So we got Choi and Brown wrong, so forget it. No, they were wrong. So that wraps the main card. We'll whip through the prelims in a sec, but I want to tell you about PropSwap first. We are brought to you by PropSwap, America's number one app to buy and sell sports bets. Find the best odds on NBA championship and Stanley Cup futures when you buy directly from other bettors like yourself. See a ticket you like but think the price is too high? Submit a bid for a price you think is fair, then buy it. PropSwap is making it easy to profit these playoffs by trading in and out teams as the postseason progresses. Every ticket purchased on PropSwap can be resold at any time. Recently, a PropSwap customer purchased Montreal Canadiens Stanley Cup future for $45 when the team was down 3-1 against Maple Leafs, and a few days later, he flipped it for $600. With PropSwap, your bet doesn't need to win in order to make money. It just needs to improve. Think like the stock market, but for sports betting. So use promo code SGP on your first deposit and receive up to $500 in bonus cash. Go to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app today. And speaking of apps, make sure you download our app, the SGPN app. We are now live in the App Store and Google Play Store. The app gives you easy access to all our picks and podcasts. So you get notifications every time a podcast is live, so you'll never miss one of our awesome podcasts. And when you do download it, please don't forget to toss us an app review and enjoy the app. I'm really liking the look of it and how it operates. So definitely check out the SGPN app. All right, prelims, we... got this one wrong. The guy with whose name I don't really want to pronounce.
Nagumaranu.
He ate everything that Alexa Kamer threw at him and won a split decision.
Yeah, but how annoying was the fence grab?
That's my
real question.
On offense, too. That's strange. You don't see that on offense.
Yeah, and, like, if you took a point after warning him 750 times, like the ref did, like, he loses this, right? Like, it's a clear split loss.
And we win.
But, yeah, like, I will say the bummer on this one is that just, like, Alexa Kamer is very clearly a physically talented individual who just has so much growing up to do in terms of, like, technique and what he needs to accomplish in the cage. Because he's only 25 years old, and he's light heavyweight, so that means he can still fight in that division for another 20 years before he feels old, right? Because how old's Glover Teixeira, and he's fighting for a title in that division soon. But, like, for him to be losing fights to William Knight and Nicolay Nagumaranu, like, it certainly takes a lot of the shine off of his, like, prospecty status. So I'm a little bummed in how this one shook out, just because, like, I'd like to think his technique is better than it is, and instead he just seems to be, like, sheer force in there.
We're not mad. We're just really disappointed in you.
I'm just disappointed. On Father's Day, I'm here to tell you that I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
We are disappointed, my son. I'm disappointed we got this one wrong, too. I'm not actually disappointed because I like the person who won. So her name's actually pronounced Vina. Is that right? I would say
I have no idea, but they were also saying here her last name was Janji Doba.
That's right.
They were saying Janji Doba, and I'm looking at her name right now.
Jandaroba.
If that's Janji Doba, I think I need to go back to school, or I have a bad understanding of how Portuguese is pronounced, because that's Jandaroba. That's Jandaroba.
Verna Jandaroba, yeah. So the R in her first name is silent, and the R in her last name is a D. Is that what you're telling us, announcers?
And the R is a D.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what I said. The R is a D, yeah.
The R is a D, but
right,
the D is
a
D J.
Is a D. Yeah.
The D is a J. The D is Janji Doba.
yeah, strange. Anyhow, she looked, wow, if she can strike like that, we already were pretty high on her, but if she can strike the way she was striking last night against Kanaka Murata, look out, strawweight division.
But let me ask, why didn't it look like that against Mackenzie Dern?
Yeah, that's weird, right?
Because she fought Mackenzie Dern, and Dern largely outstruck her. So either that is... She clearly made some improvements. She was scared against Mackenzie Dern. Or is Mackenzie Dern a good boxer?
it was only half a year ago, too. So
yeah,
maybe she made a lot
of
progress. Yeah. I think it helped that she broke her opponent's arm, or at least dislocated it in the early going, so she couldn't block anything coming to the left side of her body. That probably helped a bit.
That'll help a bit. I will also say, too, I'm really impressed by her takedown defense. I thought Murata was going to take her down more often than that, but Janji Doba looked very good in defending the
She sure family. Did. Jan, it's like that's her full name now. Her first name is Jan, the last name is D. Doba. that's her middle initial. She's Jan. Her middle name's Doreen, but she goes Jan D, and her last name's Doba. So that's her new name. And that's the name of the web. It always comes naturally. That's the name of this episode, Jan D. Doba.
D. Doba.
There you go. I always get worried if we haven't said something stupid that I can make our alternate title, but now we've done it. So, Murata's a beast, though. She was going to keep fighting. I haven't heard what we know what happened to her arm. She was in a it was an armbar, correct?
Yeah, she was in it forever. And she appears to have, like, sustained damage from it.
Yes,
yeah.
They haven't announced yet, I don't think, right? Whether it's broken, dislocated, torn, whatever the deal is.
No, not yet.
But it was unusable, and the doctor realized this just by quickly. Something must be actually broken or dislocated, because he barely even felt her arm before telling the ref the fight's over. She could not bend it. She could not, like, lift it to protect her face. I'm not sure if Jan D. Doba realized that, or she should have been spamming head kicks to her or right hooks at her face if she had known that. I'm thinking she probably didn't know that, or didn't realize it, notice that she wasn't blocking at all or wasn't using her right arm at all.
I didn't think it looked all that that obvious if you weren't being told it by, like, announcers or anything like that. So, like, it's not super surprising that she didn't know.
Yeah. So, okay, so what's next for Janji Doba? Because we're talking about a shallow division. The fact that she lost to Mackenzie Dern messes everything up, though, right?
I don't think so much, though, because look where Mackenzie Dern's ranked, though, in the official UFC rankings, right? Like, she's all the way up to number 6 now. And whatever you want to call her, the Brazilian.
Janji Doba, Miss Doba.
Miss Doba. And there's a lot of ladies in the middle of that division, too, who, like, fit the bill of somebody who can be a springboard up, right? Like, she could fight Tisha Torres. I wouldn't mind watching her fight Michelle Waterson. Even Claudia Gadelha. I'd watch her fight Claudia Gadelha.
Yeah,
like, any of those women are good stepping stones to get her back almost in that same level of a Mackenzie Dern fight. So, yeah, like, it's upsetting that she lost to Dern, because if she didn't, she'd be, like, way up top now after these last couple of performances. But, like, I mean, she's 3-2 in the UFC with 3 finishes, in two decision losses to Mackenzie Dern and Carla Esparza. And the Esparza fights on they're beef, and Esparza was on short notice too, which is worth mentioning.
Right. Yeah. So I have her. I have Dern will be as of now. Dern's fifth, and Ms. Doba is right behind her at six in my rankings. So yeah, so right at the top there. So any of those names you mentioned are good for her. We got this one wrong. Chaos Williams beat Matthew Semmelsberger pretty decisively, 30-27, 29-28, 29-28. Do you have anything you want to say about this one? I can't really remember even much of what happened in the fight. I remember it was a good fight. Now the guy really blew me away with anything, but I guess it was a good win for Mr. Williams.
Two things I have for takeaways. First of all, Sam Ellsberger would have liked to seen more takedowns from him. That's the bottom line. I think he's a better wrestler. Would have liked to seen more entries, more shots. The other thing I will say is phenomenal screenshot. If you haven't gotten a chance to see it, you can find it probably on Twitter everywhere, of Sam Ellsberger hitting a right hand on Chaos Williams and absolutely messing up his face. There's a great shot that happened. I'm sure you can find it out there if you just look for a little bit. But, apart from that, exactly what you said. Chaos Williams looked good enough to win. Like I said, this is probably the second most exciting fight on the whole card. But head and shoulders behind Marlon Vera, Davy Grant.
Is the photo on your phone, Dan? Is it in your...
Well, of course it is. Yeah, I can send that to you if you want.
Of course it is.
I think I might have retweeted it from the Top Turtle account, too. If you want to head on over there and follow Top Turtle MMA on Twitter, you can probably find it even quicker. Oh, yeah, it's right
great.
There.
I didn't think you were the Top Turtle. I thought the Shockwave was the Top Turtle guy. It's really you.
He does most of the work on the Top Turtle Twitter account, but I help out when I need to.
When it's something gruesome, of course, Dan's got to unload off his phone. The night started off so well for me. I got the last three fights we're going to go through, I got them right, and two of them were underdogs, so I thought we were going to have a good night. In the chunky guy battle of the night, Josh Parisian squeaked by Roque Martinez, but did he really? MMA decisions, majority of media says he lost the fight. Not a good fight, unless you like watching fat guys grapple with each other against sweaty fat guys grapple against each other. Against a cage. I know Dan's into that, but I'm not sure how many the rest of us are really into that. But yeah, it was a hashtag chunky guy battle, that's for sure.
I'm a little bit surprised. The MMA media had this one for Roque?
Yeah, look, everyone but two, I think, yeah. So it was like 10 plus, I think, yeah.
Okay, in real time watching it, I scored it for Josh Parisian. And maybe some of that's because I picked him.
Yeah.
But I do like Roque Martinez. I will say Martinez looked better striking. I just didn't think he had enough control over, the sheer volume and stuff like that. So, I mean, good on him. Do you think there's any chance they give him another fight? Because he is kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's hard to say. But he hasn't won yet, right? He's what, three?
He's 0-3. 0-3.
Yeah, that's... And it's not exactly... Well, Romanov is good, but he lost to Dontel Mays and now Parisian. So, I don't know. I don't know.
Let me pitch you a fight. Chunky guy fight. Would you watch him against Chris Huggy Bear Barnett?
Of course. I'd watch Huggy Bear against anyone, right?
Yeah, I think those two would be a fun striking match. I don't usually like to matchmake people who are combined 0-4 in the UFC, but I would for sure watch Roque fight Huggy Bear.
Yeah. And Parisian clearly lost the first round, and then he started spamming the groin kicks, and I think that's what helped him get back in the fight, right? He kept low-blowing, which you can get away with multiple times in this sport without having any repercussion. You can get away with eye-poking multiple times. You can get away with screen-grabbing. You can get away with crotch-kicking. So if you are smart and don't have many morals, I would do that as many times as you can and just take your stern warning and win the fight and get double your money.
Yeah, I would say the amount of cheating that has gone away, and I don't mean intentional cheating, cheating, like the amount of illegal shots that have gotten no repercussions lately has been really out of control.
Yep, but anyhow, I think it went in our favor this time because I'm sure getting kicked in the groin multiple times is going to deplete you a little bit in the fight, especially if you're a chunky guy like Roque Martinez. Rick Glenn, Starch, Joaquim Silva. I'm blanking out. Oh, it was 37 seconds. I can't even picture what. Remind me what happened. That was early in the night. I remember him knocking him out. I can't remember how it happened, though.
He hit him with a big, I believe it was a left hand. He bit him with a big left hand and followed it up.
Okay.
And just looked like, I mean, it was only 37 seconds, so you can say right. He looked as good as he looked. But, like, Rick Glenn, who now goes by Ricky Glenn, too, which I kind of enjoyed. Like, I thought that was that's a fun little switch. I like Ricky Glenn.
Where is he from? Where is he from?
He's from
Iowa?
He's somewhere in the Midwest, right?
Yeah, like Iowa, I don't know. Ricky's more of a southern thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Does it work for Iowa? I've never been to Iowa.
I think it works for Iowa. I think the Midwest embraces a Ricky.
Okay.
Like he's like Ricky Bobby. Like Iowa would have somebody named Ricky Bobby. You know, if you have two first names, one of them can be Ricky. So Ricky Glenn.
Ricky Glenny.
Yeah, well, like, dude, I felt so good for this dude. He's almost been out of the cage for 3 years.
Like,
injuries, COVID, like, everything got in this dude's way. And not only does he come back, but he comes back and, like, knocks somebody silly like that. Like, great for him. I'm kind of hoping he gets a quick turnaround. Like, I would love to see him get a chance to fight again in, like, 3 weeks.
Yeah, he's got to make up for last time, and he was only, what, 37 seconds. Did he even get hit in that fight?
I don't know if he ever got hit. Like, you might have to pull up the fight metrics or, what is it, UFC stats now. Whatever, but, like, I think maybe once Joaquim Silva hit him.
But yeah, enough that he could fight right away if need be. So
they needed a late replacement.
He got hit once. You were right. One significantly. That's it. One for two. Joaquim Silva was. So there you go. And the curtain jerker I got right. Ha ha ha. Another underdog. Casey O'Neill choked Laura Procopio cold in the third round. What do you think of that fight?
I'm going to use this as a case for an argument that I've been making for a really long time, which is people need to stop using people's belt level as a real piece of analysis. Because the fact that Laura Procopio is a black belt going into this fight, and I don't know if you saw, Casey O'Neill posted on her Instagram after this fight, my coach just gave me my brown belt. And I'm like, fucking hell. Like, how is Casey O'Neill a brown belt and Laura Procopio a black belt? Actually, she was a purple belt coming into this fight. And she looked so much better on the ground. I think we talked about whether or not the Casey O'Neill hype was real going into this fight. Like, do we think what she did to Shanna Dobson was, you know, indicative of her skill level or indicative of the fact that Shanna Dobson just doesn't really have all that great a takedown defense? And I think this proved it. Like, she is actually very skilled on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she looked very good. So onward and upward for her, right?
Yeah, I imagine she's going to be knocking on the door of that top 15 pretty quickly.
Like, only 23 too, right?
She's young. But I will say this. This is the part that worries me a little bit. They are not willing to wait right now on flyweights that they think are young up-and-comers, right? Like,
yeah,
Miranda Maverick is already getting big bookings. Miran Fureau is already getting big bookings. Like, I kind of imagine the next one for Casey O'Neill is a big one.
Yeah, that's true. It's a very thin division, and they're desperate for more fresh meat to feed to Valentina Shevchenko. She's not going anywhere fast. So that's basically what the whole division is there for, is to churn out more fresh victims for the champ, basically.
With everybody but Lauren Murphy.
Oh, right, yes. Lauren Murphy is going to be the next one chewed up by her. That's right. I forgot about that. So that puts a bow on that event. We didn't deal so hot with our picks. We hit some underdogs, which was nice. There was five underdogs again this week that won. So maybe I'm sure it's just a blip on the map that we've had so many underdogs the past 2 weeks, but you know, past events. But it's, you know, something to keep in mind. I don't know if it's going to keep up. You would think more than likely he's going to revert back to the mean, so maybe we should go more favorite heavy with next week's or this week's coming up Gain versus Volkov, perhaps.
I haven't even looked at the odds for this, but there are a lot of really weird late replacement fights in here.
Yep.
You know, like one of them being Tanner Boser. I can't even remember who he was supposed to fight.
He's supposed to fight. Yeah, that's right. He got pulled in to fight Ovin St. Preux. St. Preux was going to fight Maxim Grisham, and then
that's right. St. Preux was supposed to fight.
Right. Yeah, I don't think Boser had a fight yet.
And then so St. Preux was supposed to fight at 205.
Yeah, I think so.
And then they pulled his opponent and gave him a heavyweight instead. So they're like, OSP, don't worry about cutting weight anymore, which maybe is, like, cool for him, but also, like, real weird. And then Kennedy Zichuku taking a last-second fight is weird for me. So that's a weird one.
Yeah, Boser just fought 3 weeks ago, too.
And he was...
Five rounds, three rounds, too.
He was pissed and, like, immediately responded that he wanted to be released from his contract on Twitter, and now he's got a new contract and a fight against the light heavyweight at heavyweight.
He might be, does he?
Yeah, he got like, a six-fight contract off of that. And
oh, nice.
If I'm not mistaken, I think he'll be the smaller guy in this fight, right? Like, Ovin St. Preux's huge.
Yep.
So it's like a very weird situation.
It is a weird card when you look at it. Cyril Gain versus Alexander Volkov is the main event, but is there any other fight on here that's really, really notable or going to make any noise near the top of any division? I don't see any.
The Tim Elliott Sumu Derji one does if Sumu Derji wins.
That's right. That's the flyweight, right? Yeah,
right, because okay. I don't think Tim Elliott's all that close, but Sumu Derji's like 2-3-0, right, at flyweight,
right.
Yep. And is starting to build a case. I will also say, while Michel Pergeris is not the opponent he needs to build himself up, Shavkat Rachmanov is a guy who I've been high on. He submitted Brazilian Cowboy in his first fight. He's finally getting his second fight. So, like, maybe him, but, like... Yeah, apart from the heavyweights at the top, there's not, like, a clear answer of, like, what else is good here.
Yeah, but, it doesn't matter. We can still make money off it. Maybe even more money off it because there may be less eyes checking these lines and sharpening them. So we will be breaking that down for you Wednesday night as per usual. And this will be a fight night taking place this coming Saturday from the UFC Apex as per usual, and then we have a week off, and then we have Poirier versus McGregor 3, which I'm sure we're all dying to see again, but whatever. It's good for business, so I'm not going to complain. But what should I tell everybody to do in the meantime? Listen to Prelim Primer, Dan's other podcast, where he breaks down all the prelim fights on a card with a expert guest every week, sometimes me. Well, once every, 10 years you invite me? Is that what we're at about now?
Roughly that, yeah.
Which is fine. We talk enough now. Twice a week is more than enough. Then he's got the Top Turtle podcast where he actually talks to real-life tough guys like himself, these tough guys that they exchange war stories, and these guys and gals are actually in the UFC. Who do we have this week on the Top Turtle podcast?
I still don't have him in the can yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to hold off on saying they're officially – I have a couple of books that I'm supposed to do in the next day or two, but to not drink – actually, I don't even care. I'm supposed to talk with Isaac Villanueva, who should be – if I'm not mistaken, fighting Marcin Procneo and who's the other? Oh, Charles Rosa. Charles Rosa is supposed to fight Justin James.
All right, so we got some car accidents, houses catching on fire. Anything else going to happen to these guys?
Charles Rosa used to be a cook, so maybe
he could
start
himself
severe burn of some sort.
Yeah, a problem with a knife. So for sure, we're not going to pick these people in their fights. If they make it to fight night, then we're going to go with Justin James, and we're going to go with Marcin Procneo. So everyone knows if you want to get in early on those picks. Dan is putting the hex on Ike Villanueva and Charles Rosa, which is not very nice to him, but that's the type of guy. And Charles Rosa is a mass boy like you too, right?
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, I would have to go way back, but I'm pretty sure he was maybe the first guest on Top Turtle like five years
really?
ago. Yeah, and he's been in the UFC for so long.
There you go. Now Dan's trying to end his career by having him back. So we have that to look forward to. What else can we look forward to? You can read all our good stuff at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. We got NBA playoffs. We got there's always football. There's the European style football too, where they kick the ball. That is going on. What else we got on there? Horse racing. You'll have my MMA stuff on there next week. Baseball, of course, lots of good stuff. Fantasy football previews. So go to the sportsgamblingpodcast.com and listen to all our great podcasts on the site, on the app, actually. You listen to them on the app. You can listen to the episodes. It doesn't just tell you when the episodes drop. You can actually listen to it right on the app, too. I forgot to mention that. So definitely get the app. And you can read, if you want, MMA only, MMA-manifesto.com for in-depth MMA coverage from myself and Dan and a few other hardy souls. So, and then make sure you follow us on Twitter. Gumby Vreeland would be him. Would be Mr. Gumball, and I am Juicy Jeff Fox, but on Twitter I am Jeff Fox Writer, WRITER. Did I clean up all the mess here, Dan, tie up all the loose ends?
I think you got it all.
Okay, it's your turn to take us home, so I'm looking forward to some entertainment here. Dan's going to say goodbye to everybody.
I'm Daniel Gumby Vreeland. He is Juicy Jeff Fox, and we'll catch you next week.